Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, August 9th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Assessment is another PSP investment. Coalition of energy companies continues to spend millions of dollars to improve health care in Permian, by Stuart Doreen. Editor's note, the following is the second of two stories about a conversation with Tracy Bentley with the Permian Strategic Partnership about the possibility of the creation of a regional health care complex. The coalition of 17 energy companies known as the Permian Strategic Partnership have invested $41 million on healthcare initiatives. That is 44% of the $93 million in contributions to West Texas and Southeast New Mexico on healthcare, education, workforce, housing, road safety, and initiative support. Those healthcare initiatives include $12.8 million on a Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center surgery and subspecialty residency, and $10.7 million on a nursing and pre-med program at the University of Texas Permian Basin. Other programs include $2.3 million on counseling and guidance, $2.5 million on the TTU HSC program at Midland College, and $5.9 million on a TTU HSC Family Medicine Residency Program, and $800,000 on mobile clinics. The PSP annual report includes sections about investing in healthcare education to make a dent in the 1,000 nursing vacancies in the Permian and growing our own surgeons and specialists to help rectify the regional shortage of cardiologists and gastroenterologists and building up the number of residents working in regional hospitals. National statistics indicate that up to 60% of trained residents will remain within a 50-mile radius of the region in which they served a residency to establish their medical practice, the annual report stated. In supporting this residency program, PSP seeks to strengthen the physician pipeline for our region's hospitals. As PSP Executive Director Tracy Bentley said during an interview with the Reporter Telegram, an assessment pointing out gaping holes in Midland-Odessa showed, quote, almost 50% of people leave the region for health care, specifically for specialty reasons, unquote. We don't have great access to specialty care here, Bentley said. What about the care for those who can't leave? One reason the PSP, Scarborough Foundation, and members of both hospital districts in Midland and Odessa have been communicating about the assessment, and particularly what's next, tomorrow and 20 years down the road, is improving access to quality healthcare access across the Permian Basin. A medical complex that combines the resources of the two cities can help achieve the goal of making Midland-Odessa a healthcare destination and maybe even world-class. But the assessment and ensuing action is important because what's in place should be better, Bentley said. Bentley stated the obvious. There isn't a level one trauma care facility in Midland-Odessa. We don't even have a level two anymore, Bentley said. If you are in need of level one care, you're probably going to be airlifted to Lubbock, and sometimes people don't have that kind of time. So what level of trauma care is appropriate for our region is something that we're looking at. And then how do we get what it is going to cost us? What do we need to get to that trauma level? She said the lack of specialty surgeons and doctors is a reason a level one center is not in Midland-Odessa. We were funding healthcare initiatives long before we started that assessment, said Bentley, of the $41 million the PSP has spent on healthcare. Even if this transformative healthcare hub does not end up transpiring, the things that we will accomplish along the way are, in and of themselves, monumental. We are still going to definitely improve access to behavioral health and definitely provide more access to specialty areas. And we're definitely going to improve in our telemedicine, because that's another area that came out that we are lacking and that we need to do a lot of work. And that will help the healthcare of those working on remote work sites across the Permian Basin. Bentley said, because of the remoteness and antiquated systems that do exist, emergency response isn't always efficient. And improving healthcare means focused beyond the healthcare offered inside hospitals inside Midland and Odessa. What can't be done? Bentley said initial reports of the assessment and what the PSP and other entities are looking at were premature. She said they led people to making assumptions about facilities and other things being moved when decisions have not been made, because officials are still processing information. That information includes what investment the state could make. Could the voters in Midland and Odessa support the concept of a medical complex for the 21st century and beyond? What type of support would come from the University of Texas system and the Texas Tech Health Sciences Center? What would be part of the medical complex? The last one includes the obvious. If a more central location was determined to be needed, what would that mean for residents in eastern Midland County and western Ector County? Those talked to for this article stated facilities would be required in the heart of metropolitan areas for emergency care. Officials also suggested there would be other scenarios when geography would require care to remain inside respective city cores. Maybe the answer comes back and it's just too big of a stretch for the Permian to host something like this, Bentley said. But at least we know, and at least we did our homework. And so we can look everybody in the eye and say, we did our homework and we found it's just not feasible here. But what if it is? Nobody is saying that any of this is inevitable, except for the Behavioral Health Center. This article is entitled, Hinojos to Run for MISD District 3 Seat. Candidate Believes in the Promise that MISD Offers, by Stuart Doreen. Reagan Hinojos is running for the District 3 seat on the Midland ISD School Board. Hinojos has joined Thierre Strambler as residents who have put their name on the ballot. Tommy Bishop, who first joined the board in 2006, is expected to also compete for another term in District 3, which is generally located in southwest Midland. The sign-up period to put a name on the November 1st ballot is July 25th to August 22nd. The Midland ISD seats up this year are Districts 3, 5, and 6. Amidst all the challenges we face as a school district, I am always trying to find ways to support it, Hinojos wrote in an email to the Reporter-Telegram. Why do I look for the good? Why volunteer to paint facilities that need upgrades, or in one case needs to be torn down? Why mentor children in a school that was the focus of so much uproar last fall at LFHS? Why be on the advisory board for Idea Travis, which was performing in the bottom 10 schools in the entire state of Texas? Why would I do these things? Because I believe in the promise that MISD offers. In fact, I am living proof of that promise. Hinojos wrote that he's running because he wants to repay my community and my school district for all it has done for me, to bring leadership that inspires through action, to support the children who have little or no opportunity, to be the reason that people move here and not a reason to move away, to beautify our campuses, which are second homes to so many children, and to send a message to all employees in MISD that you are valued and vital to the health and education of our children. Years from now, when someone asks if MISD is better off than it was a decade ago, I want to be able to answer without hesitation, yes, Hinojos wrote. This article is entitled, State Production Taxes Break Records Again in July, by Mella McEwen. Texas coffers continue to expand from record amounts of production taxes paid by the state's oil and natural gas producers. Controller Glenn Hager's office this week released tax collection data that showed oil producers paid $694 million in production taxes in July, once again the highest on record, and up 84% from July 2021. At the same time, natural gas producers paid $532 million in production taxes, also the highest on record, and up 185% from the previous July. This is at least the third consecutive month production taxes have reached record highs. Oil and gas production taxes set another monthly record, primarily due to Permian Basin production. Ben Shepard, president of the Permian Basin Petroleum Association, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Permian producers continue to produce the products that the world needs and the revenues to fund critical state and local functions. All of this in spite of continual and forceful efforts from the federal government to stymie the industry. 3 months in a row of record collections, Jason Modglin, president of the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Texas taxpayers continue to see enormous direct benefits from record oil and natural gas tax revenues that fund our roads, water, and education infrastructure. For the state's fiscal year 2022, which ends August 31st, oil production taxes have totaled more than $5.75 billion, up 88.96% from the previous year. The estimate was for just more than $6.23 billion. Natural gas taxes have totaled $3.945 billion, up 191.52% from the previous year, and just below the forecast of $4.46 billion. The Texas Oil and Gas Association reports that for the state's upcoming fiscal year 2023, which begins September 1st, oil production taxes are expected to be $6.58 billion, up 104% from the $3.23 billion generated in fiscal year 2020. Natural gas production is expected to generate $4.69 billion in production taxes, up 407%. From the $925 million generated in fiscal year 2020. Texas's all-time monthly records for oil and natural gas production tax collections were shattered again in July, reminding Texans of the vast benefits our state enjoys as the top oil and natural gas producing state in the nation, said Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association. These benefits extend beyond Texas's borders. Though as our nation and world enjoy the advantages of homegrown, clean American energy that is meeting our energy needs and environmental goals here, at home, and across the globe. In July, Hager raised his certification revenue estimate upward, increasing his November estimate of general revenue-related funds available for certification by $13.75 billion, giving the state $149.07 billion in GRR funds for general purpose spending for the 2022-23 biennium. This should result in a projected fiscal 2023 ending balance of $26.95 billion, an increase of $14.95 billion from the November projected balance. Hager attributed the revision to rebounding tax revenues. He added, severance taxes had performed extremely well due to high oil and natural gas prices. The controller is expected to issue his next estimate, the biennial revenue estimate, the day before the legislative session opens in January 2023. This article is entitled DPS, 8 in stable condition after truck hits Greyhound bus. MMH activates disaster preparedness operations in response to bus accident, by Stuart Doreen. 8 people are in stable condition Monday after a two-vehicle collision that included a Greyhound bus south of Midland International Airport, according to Department of Public Safety officials. DPS reported that a Nissan Frontier was traveling eastbound on West County Road 127 around 7:56 a.m. Monday, when it failed to yield the right-of-way to a 2020 X34 Greyhound bus that was turning westbound onto West County Road 127. The Frontier struck the front end of the bus. DPS reported that the bus was carrying a total of 28 passengers. 6 passengers were transported by Midland Fire and EMS to Midland Memorial Hospital. All passengers are reported in stable condition. The drivers of both vehicles were also transported to Midland Memorial Hospital and are reported in stable condition, according to DPS. Midland Health had previously reported that it activated its disaster preparedness operations in response to a bus accident in Midland County. There were no fatalities reported.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, August 9th, 2022, Education section. Healthcare employee discovers passion for writing, by Rebecca Bell. Serenity Solis is employed in the healthcare field and is majoring in business at Midland College. However, she also has discovered a new passion, writing. I hated English in high school, she said. In fact, it was my least favorite subject. Then I took Dr. Brown's class and I learned how to write. Now I love English. I can't wait to take Dr. Brown's business and technical writing class. Her new love of writing resulted in 2 writing contest awards this past spring. She won first place in both the Women's History Month nonfiction feature series contest and in the narrative nonfiction section of the MC nonfiction writing contest. In both cases, I just wrote about people I admire, she said. The article for the Women's History Month contest was about my mother who taught me how to be independent. She is a single mother who relied solely on herself to provide for her children. She works at HEB and has moved her way up the career ladder to her current position as produce manager. The article for the narrative nonfiction contest was about my supervisor, Dr. Jeff Grigsby, an optometrist at Vision Health Specialties. I wrote about how he cares for his patients and the people in his life, how he takes pride in his work and is extremely thorough in performing his job responsibilities. I strive to pattern my own behavior and ethics after my mother and Dr. Grigsby. Solis has worked full-time at Vision Health Specialties for 2.5 years. She currently serves as Grisby's assistant, a position in which she was promoted after serving as a general certified para-optometric. This isn't the first time her hard work has rewarded her with a promotion. She began working at HEB while still in high school and continued working when she graduated. Solis served as a cashier for 2 years and was promoted to a position in the cosmetics department, where she worked until leaving to pursue a career in healthcare. She worked for Turner for about 8 months until he retired, at which time she then went to Vision Health. It's a great opportunity to learn, and I'm also interested in the business side of the medical field. That's why I chose business as my major. Solis first took classes at MC in the fall of 2019 and spring of 2020. However, like many students, after the COVID pandemic semester of spring 20, she didn't return the next fall. Then in the fall of 2021, with Dr. Grigsby's encouragement, she returned to Midland College. Because she works full-time, she only takes a couple of courses each semester. Most of her classes are online, which accommodates her busy workload. When she does take a traditional lecture class, she said that the doctor allows her to juggle her work schedule around class times. Besides English with Brown, Solis said that her favorite class so far has been a business computer applications class that she took with Professor Amy Blumenauer. Midland College announces winners of annual Midland Young Leaders Challenge. Midland College hosted the annual Midland Young Leaders Challenge with General Tommy Franks in June. The 2-day leadership development workshop for students entering the 12th grade culminated in an award ceremony on the evening of June 16th at the Shapp Center. Scholarships were presented to winners of several categories: op-ed writing, Lauren Haley, Legacy High School $1,000 scholarship; first place speech, Andres Barber Malera, Early College High School at Midland College $2,000 scholarship; and second place speech and star leader, Sophie Sherem, Trinity, $1,000 scholarship for speech and $3,000 scholarship for star leader award. The workshop and scholarships are made possible by funding from Midland County, Henry Foundation, and Warren Charitable Foundation. Each summer, Midland College hosts the workshop based on the four-star leadership principles developed by retired U.S. Army General Tommy Franks, a Midland native who led the attack on the Taliban in Afghanistan and the 2003 invasion of Iraq and overthrow of Saddam Hussein. The Midland Workshop is coordinated by staff from Midland ISD and from the General Tommy Franks Leadership Institute and Museum in Hobart, Oklahoma. It's an honor for MC to host the Midland Young Leaders Challenge, said President Steve Thomas. Part of Midland College's mission is to focus and improve quality of place, and that is exactly what this program does, provide an opportunity for youth to develop leadership skills in order to serve our community and beyond. During the workshop, students participate in presentations and discussions with community leaders from education, government, and business. The students also participate in a persuasive speech contest, and one student receives the chance to attend the Four Star Leadership Institute in Oklahoma. Sophie Sherem was this year's Four Star winner. Participating in this program was the best decision I made this summer, as it allowed me to grow in ways that I never believed were possible, she said. I cannot even begin to share everything I learned through this program, but perhaps what impacted me the most is what I learned true leaders are willing to sacrifice their own comfort for the sake of others. I now have a better understanding of what it means to be a leader, and I will apply this knowledge to benefit my community as best I can going forward. During the four-year Star Leadership Institute, Sophie received an additional $2,500 in scholarships, winning honorable mention for her workbook and serving on the winning team for the Ethics Bowl. She plans to apply to several colleges, including UT, Rice, Dartmouth, and Harvard. She will pursue a degree in computer science and hopes to become a software engineer. Sophie is a member of the Trinity Varsity Volleyball and Track teams and enjoys playing the piano, performing in musicals, and participating in band and choir.
This is the obituary column, Tuesday, August 9th. Darlene Marie Place Boudreaux. Darlene Marie Place Boudreaux of Midland passed away Monday, August 1st. She was born on October 5th, 1945, to Reese Lewis and Daisy May Place in Abbeville, Louisiana, where she was raised and educated. In 1963, she married Alfred Boudreaux, and they raised four children, Reese Lewis Boudreaux and wife Allison, Pamela Margaret Stewart and husband Billy, Tricia Elizabeth Elliott and husband Mike, and Billy Jack Boudreaux, all of Midland, Texas. She is survived by her husband, children, eight grandchildren, and great-grandchild, all of Midland. Her brother, Reese Randall Place, and wife, Kelly of Maurice, Louisiana, and sister-in-law, Celeste Boudreaux, and brother-in-law, Guy Boudreaux, both of Lafayette, Louisiana. Memorial service will be held Thursday, August 11th at 11 a.m. at St. Anne's Catholic Church. Following the service, please join the family for a reception in the church parlor. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Juanita O'Neill Fabian Nita Smith. Juanita O'Neill Fabian Nita Smith, 93, of Midland, woke up in the arms of Jesus on August 6th. A visitation will be held Tuesday, August 9th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Services will be 10 a.m. on Wednesday, August 10th at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home Chapel, with interment following at Rest Haven Cemetery. Nita was born September 1st, 1928, in Dawson County, Texas, to Robert and Lita O'Neill, and the family moved to Midland when Nita was a teenager. She married Charlie Fabian on May 19, 1945, and they had one son, Lonnie. Charlie passed away in 1994. In 2011, she married Cecil Sonny Smith, and they enjoyed 10 years together until his death in May of this year. Nita is survived by her stepsons David Smith, Kelly, and Michael Smith, Jane Ann, all from Midland, as well as two grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her parents, husbands, and son, also her six brothers, R.L., Sonny, Hoot, Elbert, Delbert, and Jimmy. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welt Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Larry J. Broom. Larry J. Broom of Midland passed away August 5th at the age of 72. He was born August 7, 1949, and served in the U.S. Air Force for 8.5 years. Larry is survived by his wife, Beverly Broom, daughter Carolyn Coffin and husband Chris, son Kevin Broom and wife Emily, daughter Laurie Vihar and husband Vince, as well as five grandchildren and many nieces and nephews. A private graveside service with military honors will be held with the family in attendance. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Enrique Gutierrez. Enrique Gutierrez, age 96, passed away August 7th. As per Enrique's wishes, cremation services have been arranged. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, and online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Paul Ormsby. Paul Ormsby, 77, of Midland, passed away August 5th. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, August 13th, at First Baptist Church Chapel in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Regina Bennett. Regina Bennett, 64, of Midland, passed away August 6th. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, August 10th, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Survivors include husband Joel Campbell. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, August 9th. Swearing in, safety, bullying, on agenda. Swearing in the newest member of the Ector County ISD Board of Trustees, a report on the school safety plan, a presentation on the bullying, reporting, and investigation process and supports, and an update on the district's strategic plan are part of the agenda for today's August 9th board workshop. The meeting is scheduled for 6 p.m. in the first floor boardroom of the Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. Dennis Jones will be sworn in as the Position 7 member of the board. Jones is an attorney and former judge. He was appointed to the board during its June 21st meeting. He replaces Nelson Minyard. The bullying presentation reviews the process for reporting bullying and the responses. For 2021-22 supplemental agenda material details that there were 238 total bullying allegations reported and 37 confirmed cases of bullying. In the counseling response to the 2021-22, there were 31,099 counseling responses in person, 7,942 parent contacts, 2,233 emails, 72 virtual, 323 phone calls, and 949 safety checks. There were 149 counseling responses to alleged perpetrators and 449 to alleged victims. The presentation shows community and outside resources are also used, including Texas Tech Campus Alliance for Telehealth Response. The partnership began in the 2020-2021 school year for grades pre-kindergarten through 12. 73 students have been referred. 41 students have utilized services. In the safety presentation, supplemental agenda material said, Superintendent Scott Beery, District Police Chief Todd Heiner, and Assistant Chief of Police Jeff Daniels will provide trustees with a school safety plan. In an August 4th ECISD live broadcast, Murray said there is a safety committee that continues to revisit and analyze information. They ensure that we're monitoring and following any new laws or policies that are created by our state legislature or the Texas Education Agency, Murray said. He added that the district's responsibility to the students and parents is to ensure that they do everything they possibly can to make sure they are safe in the learning environment. Daniel said he wanted to assure parents that keeping students safe is their number one priority. He added that they work hard to maintain that. It's a community effort, Daniel said in the broadcast. It's not just the school district's effort. Talk to your kids. If they're hearing something, they need to say something. If you hear something, please come forward and let us know. It's a community effort to keep our children safe, and it takes all of us. New role, Rodriguez prepared to take over as principal at Ross. After serving in a variety of capacities, Raquel Rodriguez feels ready to take over as principal of Ross Elementary School. This is Rodriguez's 19th year with Ector County ISD. She had been assistant principal at Noel Elementary School for the past 3 years, taught for 10 years, and was in the curriculum and instruction department for 5 years. She replaces Susan Hendricks, who is now leadership coordinator for ECISD. Ross has 40 staff members and about 350 students in pre-kindergarten through 5th grade. Rodriguez also went through the talent pipeline at ECISD for those aspiring to be campus chiefs and was pre-selected along with several others for a principal spot at a June ECISD Board of Trustees meeting for when there was an opening. I have been preparing for this for a very long time, Rodriguez said. She added that it's not just the 3 years as an assistant principal that have qualified her for the principalship. It's also her years in curriculum and instruction, which has prepared her for what matters most, which is fully supporting teachers. I feel extremely fortunate because Ross seems to be right up my alley with the systems and procedures that they have in place. My main goal here is to keep the momentum going and to continue with the wonderful things that they've been working on the past few years, Rodriguez said. Rodriguez is from Odessa. She graduated from Odessa High School and received an academic scholarship to attend University of Texas Permian Basin. She earned her bachelor's degree in computer science. I worked in the computer field for a while and then went into teaching, Rodriguez said. She and her husband Gilbert have 2 children. When she had her son, she wanted to be there for him. If I was going to have a career and still be a mom, I realized I needed to do something where I would be there with him. It worked out great. He went to the school that I was teaching at, and then I had my daughter, and she went to the school that I was teaching at. When they were off, I was off. That was when I realized that I had a deep love for teaching and learning, Rodriguez said. Being a principal now feels right. It feels like I have the background to help me in this role, and so that's what feels right. It feels natural to me. Definitely the years I spent in curriculum and instruction, I went to training for all content areas, for all grade levels. I came back to the campus and supported teachers in kindergarten through 5th grade with planning lessons, modeling instructional strategies, preparing and delivering trainings for the professional development, Rodriguez said. It's more than just being a principal. It's being the instructional leader because you roll up your sleeves and you get on in there with everything that's going on, she added. Ross is entering its 3rd year as an opportunity culture campus. It has been in place, Noel, for 1 year. I've been involved with creating a plan for opportunity culture and seeing the first year through. But coming to a campus where it's their third year, I see how it's supposed to flow, and it's giving me this overall picture of what it's supposed to look like, Rodriguez said. The culture for coaching and feedback for teachers in this campus is incredible. We definitely commit to protecting purposeful, in-time school for planning, collaboration, and teacher development. All of those things in the long run are what truly impact student learning, she added. She added that she is pleased to be at campus where she can continue the momentum. I work closely with Ms. Hendricks, and I can text her at any time. She's been supporting me through the transition just to make it a flawless transition. I haven't had to create anything from scratch, that's for sure, Rodriguez said. I know Ms. Hendricks. I used to be her instructional specialist, so I know her style. She trained me back when I was in curriculum and instruction. We have very similar philosophies, and our work ethic is very similar. It's just a natural fit here, she added. Her assistant principal, who is also new, is Brenda Ruiz. Ruiz has been a special education diagnostician, Rodriguez said. So she has that incredible background where she will be able to fully support all students. She's learning now about the ELL, English Language Learner students, and how to help support bilingual students. That's going to be new for her, but she's going to be a great asset in the area of special education, Rodriguez said. Along with building on the existing foundation at Ross, Rodriguez said she would like to introduce blended learning. I think that would be a slow implementation, starting with just a few pilot teachers. But I have seen the incredible growth that blended learning can bring in a classroom from my experience at Noel. We implemented blended learning there, and it was incredible. Everything flowed so easily for teachers, so that's definitely something I would like to do in the future. I always described it, blended learning, as a blender with all of these best practices. It does not take the spotlight away from the teacher. The teacher still is in control of her mini lesson. After her mini lesson, she'll have students practice independently in an independent station. She'll have students practice through technology in a technology station. She'll have students working, collaborating together in a small group, and all this will be happening at the same time while she's pulling small groups, Rodriguez said. Blended learning still has the traditional whole group mini lesson, and then everybody breaks into their areas. They'll also transition from students working independently to students coming to the collaboration station to those students going to technology. They get the opportunity to try the lesson in all these different models. If they work better independently, they still have the opportunity to work in a collaboration station. They still have the opportunity to develop their technology skills. It's not limiting the lesson in just one way of doing it. You have several different ways of doing it, and the students get opportunities to try all these different ways to see what works best for them, she added. The teacher is still able to pull her small group and work with the kids who need that reteach. It's really neat to see it in action, Rodriguez said. Chief of Schools Keeley Boyer said the district is excited to have Rodriguez as the new principal at Ross. She is an innovative leader who thinks outside the box when it comes to instructional practices. She has a strong background in special education and curriculum and instruction and will bring a ton of energy to Ross, Boyer said. County to revise contract with Permia Care. The Ector County Commissioner's Court is scheduled to consider increasing the contract cap for the agreement between Permia Care and Ector County. Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes said over the phone on Monday morning that services across the board from Permia Care are increasing. This agenda item and others will be heard at 10 a.m. Tuesday at the Courthouse Annex. We have an agreement that we sign with them every year for the services that they provide, Hayes said over the phone. This is just us redoing that contract. All the fee structures have gone up, so there's an increase. According to the PermiaCare website, its mission is to enhance the behavioral and developmental health and wellness of our community by helping people live their best lives. The Odessa American previously reported in early May that PermiaCare and Ector County would be starting their own competency restoration program within the jail. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths said on Monday, the competency restoration program hasn't started yet, but the process to do so is still underway. I'm so thankful for PermiaCare, Griffiths said. They sure help us a lot, whether it's in the jail or out on the street. They are always very responsive, and they help us a bunch. They are a great organization for us, and we are blessed to have them and the staff they have in place. I'm confident when they get the restoration program started, it's going to be successful. The commissioners will also hear from Greg Barber at the Ector County District Attorney's Office about appointing Christy Hamilton of PermiaCare and Javier Gonzalez of the Odessa Police Department to the Ector County Sexual Assault Response Team Board. Commissioners are also set to approve the court schedule and holiday schedule for Ector County for the 2022 to 2023 term. During the 2021 to 2022 term, there was a total of 24 commissioner meetings scheduled, and there are 12 holiday days. Hayes said the number of commissioners' meetings and holiday days will remain the same. There will also be three items in executive session, which include legal matters, real estate issues, and personnel matters. The court will also consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve the joint election resolution for the general election and the City of Odessa election to be held November 8, 2022, and authorize the county judge and county commissioners to sign. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action to approve notice of general and the City of Odessa election, Ector County early voting schedule, and Election Day voting centers, and authorize the county judge to sign. Consider, discuss, award, reject, or take any other action regarding the proposal for life, AD&D, and supplemental life, and authorize the county judge and other county officials and employees to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action regarding change order number 1 for Cottonwood Road, Phase 2, PO number 38312, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Consider, discuss, and take any necessary action on an alleyway vacation at 3100 North County Road West, being a subdivision establishing lots 28, 2930 and Block 17 containing 5.010 acres, part of Section 40, Block 42, T1S, Texas and Pacific Railroad, Ector County, Texas, and authorize the county judge to sign all documents associated with this agenda item. Review, consider, discuss, approve, and take any necessary action regarding the following proposed consent agenda. To consider, discuss, and approve a line item transfer to general fund, building maintenance, motor vehicle equipment, 001-710-5505 from water, sewer, trash, 001-710-5354 for $12,150. Consider, discuss, approve, reject, and take any necessary action regarding the Ector County Investment Report for the quarter ending June 30, 2022. Consider, discuss, and approve a budget amendment to Sales Tax Fund, Jail, Motor Vehicle Equipment, 005-420-5505, and to Sales Tax, 005-4006, for $36,450. Consider, discuss, and approve a budget amendment to General Fund, Library, Library Supplies, 001-690-5185, and to Donated Revenues, 001 41714 $4,788. Consider and approve the Accounts Payable Fund Requirements Report for August 9, 2022 to review county financial statements and reports. Quick Hits, Coffee, and Chat. The University of Texas of the Permian Basin has scheduled coffee and chat with Grammy award-winning singer and songwriter Larry Gatlin at 10:30 a.m. to 11:45 a.m. today at the UTPB Student Activity Center. Free back-to-school haircuts. Amenti Beauty Academy, 3119 East University Boulevard, Suite A, is offering free haircuts for students ages 5 through 12 through August 31st. Haircuts will be done by the Academy students with a licensed professional overseeing the process. Call 432-272-4444. Teachers Appreciation Contest. Sparklight recently announced it will award $1,500 each to 10 K-12 teachers making a difference in their schools and communities as part of the Internet Service Providers A Stronger Connection social media campaign. Individuals throughout the communities in the 21 states that Sparklight serves may nominate a teacher simply by sharing a photo and written entry outlining how the educator works to build connections and go above and beyond for their students. Teachers perform a vital role in educating the future leaders of our communities and often spend their personal time and resources to ensure their students have the tools they need to be successful. Trish Neiman, Vice President of Communication Strategy, said, Sparklight wants to recognize the outstanding educators in the cities and towns we serve and help them get their school year off to a great start. Entries will be accepted through August 26th at sparklight.com/contest. Individuals whose nominees are selected to win will also receive a back-to-school prize pack from Sparklight. The winners will be highlighted on Sparklight's social media channels, including Facebook and Instagram. Undercover cops arrest game room employees. A handful of game room employees are in trouble after four undercover Odessa Police Department operations last week. According to the Odessa Police Department report, undercover detectives went into the Blue Start game room on East 52nd Street Wednesday, and one of them won $10 after putting $20 into a gaming device. The officer told the employee, later identified as Crystal Alvarez, they wanted to check out and she gave him $30. Under Texas law, game rooms are only supposed to award customers prizes valued at no more than $5. The next day, undercover officers witnessed another employee paying a customer in cash as well, the report stated. After pulling the woman over for a traffic stop, she admitted she'd played $20, $190, and was paid in cash. The officers seized her winnings, according to the report. According to the OPD report, Alvarez was arrested on suspicion of engaging in organized criminal activity, a state jail felony punishable by 6 months to 2 years in prison. She was released Friday after posting a surety bond of $3,000. Officers have requested a warrant for the other employee, Hui Tang, the report stated. On the same day, OPD reports indicate undercover officers also went into the Good Game Room on Andrews Highway. According to the report, an officer played $20 on a gaming machine, won $10, and was paid $30 by Hoon Sok Chang. On Thursday, officers again went into the game room undercover, and an employee named Dae Kim paid an undercover officer $35 after the officer played $20 on one of the machines and won $15. Officers have requested warrants for Kim and Chang, accusing them of engaging in organized criminal activity, according to the report. The Odessa City Council has tightened up its ordinance in game rooms, but Mayor Javier Hoven wants the city to stop issuing business permits to game rooms. He said the city council are expected to discuss the matter Tuesday night. There are 28 game rooms operating within the city limits and 35 within unincorporated Ector County. ECSO investigating hospitalization of toddler. The Ector County Sheriff's Office launched an investigation Sunday after a 15-month-old boy taken to Medical Center Hospital with an injured hand tested positive for methamphetamines. Sheriff Mike Griffiths said deputies received a call from hospital employees shortly before 2:30 p.m., and they are working with Child Protective Services on the investigation. No arrests have been made as of Monday morning, he said. The injury to the boy's hand was a minor one, but he remains hospitalized, Griffiths said. Man arrested in connection to stalking and burglary. An Odessa man who prompted police to go to the same apartment three times in one night in March was arrested Saturday on suspicion of stalking and burglary. According to an Odessa Police Department report, a 26-year-old woman called 911 three times on March 15th because her former partner, Gilbert Alvarez, kept coming to her apartment in the 8700 block of Hunter Miller Way, wanting to fight the man she was with. She also said that when he wasn't at the apartment, he was repeatedly calling her phone to curse at her. The police first were summoned to the apartment at 2:40 a.m. after the woman said Alvarez, 28, punched the man's vehicle window and threw rocks at the window. The police responded again at 5 a.m. after the woman said Alvarez began to bang on the door. Just before 6:30 a.m., the woman called 911 saying Alvarez had kicked in her front door and entered the apartment. According to the report, he also left because he thought the woman was going to retrieve the other man's gun. An OPD officer reported that while she was at the apartment, Alvarez called the woman repeatedly and cursed at her and the woman before hanging up each time. The officer said she had the woman ask Alvarez why he kicked in the door, and he said it was because she had a man inside the apartment, using a racial and inaccurate slur to describe the man. According to the report, Alvarez called the woman 40 times from 2 a.m. through 7:30 a.m. from a blocked number. The woman had also filed a police report against Alvarez 4 days prior, alleging he'd sent her text messages stating he was going to kill her. Alvarez was booked into the Ector County Jail Saturday on suspicion of burglary of a habitation, a Class 2 felony, and stalking, a Class 3 felony. Class 2 felonies are punishable by 2 to 20 years in prison, and Class 3 felonies are punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. He was also booked on a failure to appear warrant in a marijuana case and a motion to revoke probation warrant in a DWI case. He remains in jail on a surety bond totaling $45,000. Odessan arrested on suspicion of prostitution. A 61-year-old Odessa woman was arrested on suspicion of prostitution last week. According to an Odessa Police Department report, detectives were investigating a business in the 700 block of West County Road and Ting San Fao Fara agreed to conduct sex acts for money. An officer gave the woman $300 for a specific act, and after she told him to remove his clothing, he arrested her on suspicion of prostitution, which is a Class B misdemeanor, punishable by up to 6 months in jail, the report stated. Online jail records indicate San Falfara was booked under the last name of San Falfara Roth early Thursday morning and was released Friday after posting a $1,000 surety bond. Odessa woman dies in crash. A 23-year-old Odessa woman was killed in a three-vehicle rollover at Timberland Avenue and West University Boulevard Sunday afternoon. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, a 23-year-old man from McCamey was traveling south on Timberland Avenue in his Nissan Rogue when he disregarded the stop sign at West University and struck a GMC Sierra, which then overturned and collided with a Ford F-150. A passenger in the GMC Elisa Velazquez Navarrete was killed in the crash, which happened shortly before 4 p.m. According to DPS, Velazquez Navarrete wasn't wearing a seatbelt. The three drivers who were wearing seatbelts were uninjured. 8 transported following Greyhound wreck. 6 Greyhound passengers and 2 others were taken to Midland Memorial Hospital Monday morning after a crash on West County Road 127 in Midland County. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, a Greyhound bus driver failed to yield the right-of-way to a Nissan Frontier while pulling out from a Pilot truck stop onto westbound West County Road 127. 6 of the 28 passengers on the bus were taken by Midland Fire and EMS to the hospital along with the 59-year-old driver of the bus and the 25-year-old driver of the Nissan. DPS stated everyone was in stable condition. The crash remains under investigation.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.